Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million people. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 310 for July 26th, 2017. Heathkit K1T special event.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. You're tuned in to Ham Nation right here on the Twit Network, and it's going to be super tonight because we have lots of amateur radio history, and we have some current events, and all kinds of things. You also need to get your soldering iron out because we got things going over here in the pine board section. So all kinds of things tonight. I'm glad you're here. And for you watching, why, go check in the chat room. That's always a lot of fun. There's a lot of people in the chat room, and we have a lot of fun over there. I'll try to get there later. But we have a lot of things to cover. So first of all, let's run around the horn real quick. We're going to run down to Costa Mesa and come right back. But there's Gordon West. Gordo, how are you?
We're doing great. K2BSA, standby. Well, I'm really not working them, but they're on the air. Boy Scouts of America, Girl Scouts of America, National Scout Jamboree until this Friday, and then starting tomorrow, Central States VHF Society for 4 days in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Support the Parity Act, Senate 1534. Write your congressmen and senators for Parity Act. And Gordo's got band charts. Write us on your club letterhead as an instructor, and we'll get you all the details. Bob, back to you.
All right. Well, we have a very special guest with you in a little while. We'll come back to him. Dave is here, W7UUU, and he is the master of Heathkit. And Dave, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing really well. This is quite a treat and an honor. I never thought this little K1T adventure would end up on Ham Nation, so I'm doing really well.
Well, thank you. K1T is a very special event, and everybody pay attention here in a couple of minutes. It's going to be very exciting about what's happening. And Don, speaking of excitement, you had some good times this weekend. We don't want to talk about the airplane ride, but how are you doing? You back home?
Yeah, Oklahoma City was amazing. The airplane ride home, the Houston to New Orleans leg, was a little tedious. There was a crazy woman literally on my airplane who ran forward and tried to storm the cockpit, and she had this softball-sized crystal in her hand, and it took like three passengers and two flight attendants to subdue her, and we turned around and went back to Houston to get her off the plane. So that was an adventure. But, Bob, I understand you were on the Big Shortwave last night with Ted Randall, WTWW 5085 and 12.105 right now. You can hear Ham Nation on that thing. Did you know? I didn't know this. I bought an Android tablet at the Oklahoma City Ham Fest, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Did you know that QSO Radio Show has an Android app? They don't have one for iOS. That's why I didn't know about it until just now. You can listen to WTWW on your Android device with the QSO Radio Show app. We need to get one for iOS because I just have one Android device, but very cool. So hello to everybody listening on WTWW. It's a great resource, and the Ted Randall and family, we thank you for putting us on there. But we'll have more from Dr. Tamitha Scove. She's actually in France this week, so I'll take care of the solar stuff and some very interesting things to talk about solar-wise. We dodged a bullet. More on that coming up, and more about the Oklahoma City ham holiday. Bob, back to you.
All right. We're looking forward to that. Sorry I missed it, but I was in Cleveland at the Rock Hall. We had to do some things up there, so that was also fun. We visited the Christmas Story House. I didn't know it was in Cleveland, and Sarah found that out a couple of days before we went there. So for all you Christmas Story fans, you can go buy a leg lamp, and you can actually tour the house that was filmed, and it was really fun. I took a bite of Lifebuoy soap. I put my tongue on the flagpole, and I crawled underneath the kitchen sink. There was a couple of little kids doing that, and I said, I can do that. And the guy says, how old are you? I said, I'm 76. He said, you can do that? Well, of course I can. Boom, I did it. So I have a bunch of pictures, but I didn't want to bore you because we got too much coming up, meaning we're going immediately back to Costa Mesa. And here is Gordo with Dave. What a fascinating segment this is going to be. So take a listen, everybody. Here it comes. Gordo, it's all you and Dave's session.
Well, thanks, Bob. And I can't wait, Dave, to hear more about your fantastic review of Heathkit products and what you've done to keep that Heathkit look coming on. Dave, how are you tonight?
I'm doing very well indeed, Gordo, and I appreciate being on the show to talk a little bit about Heathkit and what this whole project is about.
Well, terrific, Dave. Well, Dave, let's jump right in, and we'll let you narrate a little history about Heathkit. All right, here we go, Dave. You're on.
Well, thank you for that, Gordo. The pictures you're going to see are some slides that you can actually see and read all that text. So don't try to read the text. It's all at the K1T page on QRZ. But what this is all about is the foundation of the Heath Company, as far as electronic kits is concerned, actually started 70 years ago this month with what you see in that picture, the 5-inch oscilloscope kit. And a guy named Howard E. Anthony was the one who had bought the company out of bankruptcy in 1935. And it was his vision that came up with the first electronic Heath kit. Next slide, please.
Wow, that's great.
So here's a picture of Howard Anthony, one of the famous ones. Howard was an engineer, and in spring of 1947, a lot of military surplus parts were ending up on the market, and he and an engineer friend realized they could buy something like 5,000 oscilloscope tubes for about the equivalent of about $100 in today's dollars, because they were being basically disposed of by the government. And that's what launched the electronic era. But Heathkit began with Edward Bayard Heath, this rather rough and tumble looking fellow who in 1914 started the Heath Airplane Company. And he sold airplane kits, the most famous being the Heath Parasol airplane. And he was a great aviator. Next slide, please. Here you can see, you can't really see the picture really well, but it's Edward Heath himself helping assemble one of his early Parasol airplanes in the factory. Date unknown, but probably about 1920 or so, when the heyday of amateur flying was really beginning. Next slide, please. And so this is a restored version of what the Heathkit Parasol airplane originally looked like. And it was a very easy to build kit that used readily available motorcycle engines of the time. So you didn't get the engine, you built the airplane, and then you sourced your own motorcycle engine. Next slide, please. So the factory picture you see here is actually on Territorial Road in Benton Harbor, Michigan. But this is where the Heath Parasol factory actually began. And tragically, Edward Heath died in February of 1931 during a test flight of one of his airplanes. And by 1935, the company had gone fully bankrupt, and it was purchased by a very young man named Howard E. Anthony. Howard was the guy that really brought us Heathkit as we know it. So last March, we discovered that his grave was never really recorded properly. So I went back to Benton Harbor, actually to Riverside Cemetery in Dowagiac, Michigan. And I had a granite plaque in engraved to affix to his gravestone there in Dowagiac. And in this picture, you can see the two gentlemen. I'm the guy in the two-tone coat, and the guy next to me, that's Jonathan Anthony, the only surviving member of the Anthony family who has the name. And next to him is Mark Thomas, his distant cousin. So they were very honored to be there for this event. So it all culminates in what you see here. This is me sitting in my shack with my my Heil Pro 7 headset connected to Heathkits to honor this event. So if you go to the K1T page on QRZ.com, you'll see the operating schedule for the event and when I'm going to be on CW sideband, etc. So I try to keep that dynamically updated. So that's pretty much a rundown of the event itself. Next
wow,
slide, please.
That is terrific, Dave. Now, Dave, how about telling us what you've done, not only for the event, but to keep the Heathkit look going? So Brian will bring up the next series of shots, and we'll take a look at all you have done. And we don't recommend flying a Heathkit airplane just yet. But wow, what a setup. What have we got here, Dave?
Well, this is the current operating position. This is where I'm sitting right now, and this picture was taken recently, so it's very, very current. Everything you see that's Heathkit branded in this picture is restored and operational, and I've got pictures that we'll very briefly run through that kind of show that process. But generally, to the left is the Heathkit SB401-301 combination you see right there, and the keying device is below it. That's my CW position. The center position we'll talk about as a separate slide. That's a an ICOM IC7300 in a an SB303 box, just because it just didn't seem right. And those two monitors, that's actually my primary computer monitors in the shack, but they have wallpaper that looks very Heathkit-esque when they're not displaying web pages. So that's the main central place where I'm operating. And there's a close-up of the IC7300 transceiver mounted in the SB303 case.
Wow, it's great.
Well, thank you. And special thanks to a local club member, Rich Patrick, KR7W, who did the woodworking for me on that. It's actually extremely robust, and the transceiver is not actually permanently mounted. It just sits in there. And so that's where I'm sitting right now. Of course, that's a static picture, but that's me every night this last week operating K1T with my Heil Pro Set 7 headset on the SB101 transceiver. So it all started with a whole lot of messy work acquiring the radios, and I stripped them all down with aircraft stripper, and boy, oh boy, I don't ever want to have to do that again. That's an SB303 cabinet, I believe, where the ICOM now lives, and that is one of the two cabinets for the SB650 digital displays. Boy, I'll tell you what, that stuff is nasty stuff to work with, that aircraft paint stripper, but it does a good job for taking things all the way down to bare metal. So there I am with my chemical-resistant vest and protective eye covering and chemical gloves, because that stuff will burn the hair off you if it even touches. It's nasty stuff. Ultimately, all getting zinc chromate paint applied to them, and multiple coats of paint, all to an original Heathkit SB green color. So all restored to normal Heathkit colors. It was a very major painting job. About a year ago this month, I was doing all that in the garage.
Now, Dave, where do you get the chassis to be able to convert them over to your modern gear? Do you find them at swap meets or eBay, or how?
Well, these are all, you know, original Heathkits that I've acquired from all of those sources, eBay, swap meets, garage sales, wherever. And, you know, I'm just basically restoring a whole bunch of Heathkits. But when we move through the slides, there's a whole series of little boxes I've created along the way that I like to call fake Heathkits. Here's a lineup of the gear in my garage as it was coming in, cases stripped off, ready to be refinished, as the gear went into the shop for restoration. And many thanks to a lot of people on QRZ.com and in the real world, quote unquote, that helped me through a lot of these restorations. But that's the gear all lined up, getting ready to be restored. And here's a partial view sitting on my bench as individual Heathkits came back to life, and they were then installed in the completely refinished cabinets to basically look like they did when they were brand new. So a lot of work doing that. But this is kind of the fun stuff. These are what I call my fake Heathkits. Many might look at that and think it's an old Heathkit phone patch. But in reality, I use the old Heathkit phone patches to build things I need. So this is a device. It's a fake Heathkit, I call it, called an HA4. It's a four-channel amplifier for running with my little QRP rigs, the Hot Water 7, 8, and 9 Heathkit rigs, just to get speaker-level audio and what amounts to a VU meter. So I create all that artwork in Microsoft Publisher and even work on the rear panels. I like to make them look really good front and back. So that's just the rear panel showing the multiple inputs to the HA4. Quote-unquote fake Heathkit box, but designed to match the look and feel. And this is a necessary device, just a simple speaker selector to allow me to select any one of the receivers to go into the SB600 speaker. And of course, it does have load balancing in there so that I'm not wiping out the output tubes of the receivers that are not selected. So I do try to think through that. I actually think Jim N2EY was the guy who said, you better put a load resistor in there or you're going to smoke some very expensive output tubes on unloaded radios. This is another extremely important device to the K1T project. This is the fake Heathkit keying selector. Again, something Heathkit could have made but never did. So I just made it look like a Heathkit, where it allows any one of my keying devices to key any one of my radios. So six keys in, out to six keying devices out to six transmitter devices. So any key can key any transmitter. And again, it's just simple wiring. It's just simple, carefully laid out, but, you know, just nicely done, in my opinion. But just wiring to just make inputs go to outputs. And then, of course, handling the load resistance of the speaker loads. So that's the insides of those two boxes, the speaker selector and the keying selector. This one turned out to be exceptionally important. The top box contains a rheostat to vary voltage, and the bottom box is an old relabeled, repainted old Radio Shack power supply. And again, I just redid the artwork. The top box came off the free table at my radio club, and it's driving about 16 of the little 50-millimeter muffin fans. And so every one of the radios in the Heathkit lineup has at least two of the muffin fans to suck the heat out. Otherwise, because of the density of the radio pack, I would have radios failing. And the next slide...
And Dave, where do you get all of the great artwork to be able to put into what we see here? I mean, it looks absolutely perfectly finished.
Well, thank you very much for that. I take a lot of pride in that, actually. And when we get to the end of these fake Heathkits, I want to hold one up on the camera and show you one that was the very first one that I ever did. The artwork is done with Microsoft Publisher software, and if anyone wants to email me with tips on how to do that, I'd be happy to reply to that. There's a look of the fan controller unit with its power supply and a couple of the muffin fans just on a sample case to show how I use. There's little pins on the fans that lock them into the holes without damaging it. But this is one of the most fun projects that I did. This is the Heathkit Heil interface.
All right.
And what this allows me to do, this is, again, it's another repurposed old Heathkit HD 15 phone patch, but it allows me to take my ProSet 7 and connect it to the SB300. So there's the front panel of it. The VU meter is actually just being driven by a little amplifier, and I've got a calibration knob on it so that I can set it so that 0 VU equals S9 on the SB101 transceiver. And then it's just got PTT inputs for the Heil FS3 and HS3 foot switch and hand switch for operating the headset. And it's really very simple. It's just signal routing like my other boxes. If you have really good eyes, Bob will see it. I know there's a tiny little TX1 matching transformer that's essentially hot glued to the chassis in the top left. And that's what converts the low impedance microphone capsule to the high impedance required by the radio. And I'll tell you what, this thing works fabulously. If you want to put an old radio on the air with a Heil headset, this is the way to do it. So there's the box as it sits right now in my station, connected into the SB101 and paired with my Heil headset. And after this one, if we can go to live camera, I've got one other fake Heathkit I want to show you here. So I'm just going to pick it up. And this is the first one I ever did. I'll try to juggle this and keep the microphone from making too much noise. But this was the very first one, and it's a little hard to see in this light, but it's I call it the fake Heathkit HC 10 station console, and it was designed to be a matching station console for the Heathkit Hot Water 16 transceiver. And it's a very practical device. It's got an Autech audio filter inside of it for audio selectivity, a little digital clock for UTC time, and then on the speaker bezel is from an old SB610. And the whole thing was designed and worked exceptionally well with my Heathkit HW16 transceiver to work and confirm all 50 states plus 50 DX. So this was also run as an April Fool's joke as an unbuilt Heathkit prototype a couple of years ago on QRZ. So if you do a little searching there, it was kind of a fun project presenting that. But I like to create these boxes to help facilitate things that Heathkit probably didn't see profit margin in, but it's kind of my way, just my little way of, in a way, honoring Heathkit to say, you know what, I know you guys could have thought of this, you would have thought of this, you just didn't think of it. And you know, so I get some criticism for making Heathkit labels for them, but it really is a way of honoring Heathkit. I never claim that they're Heathkits, they're fake Heathkits, and I tell everybody they're fake Heathkits, but it kind of honors the company that, you know, they could have come up with this if they thought about it.
Wow, that is terrific, Dave. Now, Dave, can you tell us quickly about your K1T special event station and how much longer will you be on the air with your cast?
Great question. I appreciate that, Gordo. So K1T began on July 23rd, which was actually the 63rd anniversary of the death of Howard Anthony. He also died in a plane crash, very tragically, on July 23rd, 1954. And so I chose that day as the start day to honor him, and the event honors the 70th anniversary of the first electronic Heathkit. So that was July of 1947, and I'm running at the full length of time allowed for a special event station, which is 15 days, 14 technically. So it'll run until 23:59 on August 5th. Of course, that's in UTC. And I'm running sideband on the even hours UTC and CW on the odd hours UTC. Watch DX Summit .fi for spots. That's where I do my spotting. I try to keep the QRZ page for K1T updated with a dynamic update on the schedule section because I do work, so my operating time hinges around my work schedule. But I'm on every day. I'll be on heavily this weekend. We still all have a week and a half left to work K1T. There's a great QSL card that will be available for an SASE, and also a certificate that if you email for it, you can either get a printed copy for a small donation, or I'll just email it to you for free in PDF and you can print it yourself.
Wow, that is terrific. Well, thanks to Ann in 7 Alpha November, your better half that did such a great job on lighting and audio and so on. That's Dave, W7UUU, and K1T on the air special event. Dave, any last words before we swing back to Bob, who maybe has a comment? Dave?
No problem at all. I think that covers everything, and I appreciate how well-structured the show has been. You guys did a great job and good production from Brian, and I'm honored to be on the show. This is one of those really cool things that only come along once in a while. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much, Dave. And if you'll stick around, because we're going to bring you back up, because we know the chat room is probably going to have plenty of questions all about your role and keeping the name Heathkit out front. All right, Bob, wow, what a great guest, huh, Bob?
Absolutely fabulous. Thank you, Dave. And Dave, we should mention that on Sundays, you get in at 2 o'clock Central on 14292 and work the Heathkit Vintage Net. I get in there quite often, right after the Vintage Sideband Net at 1 o'clock. So want to work a lot of Heathkits and hear some great rigs. There you are. Do you get on that Heathkit net at all, Dave?
I have, and I plan to get on this Sunday on 14292 for the, I think it comes on right after the Swan Vintage Net. So yes, I will try my best to be on this Sunday.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay, well, maybe I'll catch up with you there. Well, we're looking forward to you having a successful K1T. What a cool deal. So thanks a lot for doing all this and being on with us. And I'm glad we could work this out. And I figured that eventually we'd catch it when you could get a couple of minutes out. So get back on the air and work all those wonderful special event stations. That's just great. That's great. Well, I think we better go find out where Don is, because I think he was roaming around somewhere after his plane escapade. Are you okay mentally? Are you okay?
Oh, you mean in general or after the plane ride?
After after that crazy lady was on that plane.
It was a little harrowing, but other people had it well under control, and so I didn't feel the need to go up and try to assist, although I thought about it, and then I thought, well, I'm just going to be in the way because it's well under control, so I set my butt in the seat. But it was interesting to say the least. But anyway, I want to talk about one of our sponsors here on Ham Nation, and thank you, Dave. The Heathkit stuff is just absolutely fabulous. I mean, you do some amazing work. Just if you ever decided to maybe get into business and start selling those things, I guarantee you, you'd be successful, and you would need an account. You'd need an accountant to keep track of all your income, and that's where FreshBooks comes in. FreshBooks, all new version of their cloud accounting software. It'll make running your business easy, fast, and secure. FreshBooks has a dashboard. It gives you quick access to your spending, outstanding balances, total profit reports like sales tax summary and profit and loss. And new time tracking features make it easy to bill for time by client and by specific projects. All you got to do is press play to track your time to the minute. And when it comes time to create an invoice, you know what you did and when you did it and how much to charge for it. Send professional looking invoices online and get paid an average of 11 days faster. And with FreshBooks payments, your customer can pay straight from their invoice. See what invoices have been sent, viewed, and paid, as well as outstanding invoice totals. Let me repeat that. See what invoices have been sent, viewed, and paid. So no excuse for your client or your customer saying, well, I never got that. Well, I'm looking online. It says you saw that 3 days ago at 7:02 a.m. on a Thursday. that kind of information is handy to have. You can also brand and set recurring invoices, set automatic payment reminders, or set automatic late fees, too. Stay connected to your clients. Keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks app. Take it with you. Snap a photo of your receipt or connect your bank account, credit card to automatically import expenses on a daily basis. FreshBooks also integrates with some of the apps you already use. And some you'll be glad you found, like Stripe, Shopify, Gusto, Acuity Scheduling, and more. And FreshBooks adds new features and new improvements to their platform on a weekly basis. You can now create and send estimates to your clients from the FreshBooks iOS app. Send invoices to multiple people in an organization by adding them as secondary contacts. Detailed overviews of client payments with a new payments collected report. It's no wonder FreshBooks was included in the Forbes Small Giants list for 2017. You can try it for free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation. Just enter HamNation in the How Did You Hear About Us section. FreshBooks.com/HamNation. Thank you, FreshBooks, for being a part of what we do here on Ham Nation. From Heathkit to Pine Board. This is kind of a cool show tonight, Bob. I'm pumped.
Well, it's all about kits, right? Oh, boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm telling you, it's just incredible. Here, I'll play you some. This was this morning. I worked Richard, my mentor, that got me started in this a couple of years ago. Here we were on 75 this morning. Here he is with one of the Pine Board transmitters.
Back to Bob, and then he could send it on out, and we'll see if who can copy who. I'm running about 5 watts. 5 watts for the 6AG7 transmitter.
K9 EID, half copy, Bob. W0BVT.
Wow, wow, wow. That's amazing. 200 miles away. And
wow.
The transmitter that he was using was this right here. Well, not this one, but exactly like it. So that's what you heard with the preamp and all of that. So we're just having way much fun in the mornings when we get on together and let's see. I think it starts the first week in September. I'll keep you posted on that. We have the Peanut Whistle Net. And that's what really got me started on all this. It's really wonderful. All of us get on that net, and you can't run any more than about 10 or 15 watts. It's amazing. Well, check this out. Here are a bunch of things that come in from people, you people, that watch the show and build. This is from Virginia. And Virginia She wanted to go to her club meeting. She had finished the field strength meter. Then she did a beautiful job on the power supply. We'll come back to that. She said, boy, I wish I had time to make the preamp up, but I don't. And I would take it to my club. I said, don't worry about it. I sent her my preamp. So she went to her club meeting. And there's her setup that she did at her club meeting. And I'm sure they all enjoyed seeing and hearing about Virginia's project. So we're so proud of what Virginia's doing. And she's now working on the transmitter. So it won't be long. And she'll probably be joining us in the morning. But that's her her power supply. And then, of course, our preamp. Well, we get all these things. I just don't have enough time to go through them each day, but each show I'll try to get to a bunch of them here as we go through and in the future. But we're going to start off again with the transmitter, and what you're going to do is go to Hobby Lobby and buy their Pinewood stuff. It is really cool. It's already finished. It's got a real nice edge on it. Now I took that and I put a little bit of pine, what do they call this? A pine wood something. It's a stain, and I stained it. Now, you'll notice those holes that I've punched with a punch. And what that is doing is I knew exactly where the parts were going. And you want to follow along with some of the things that we do about this guy. This is the layout of the parts, exactly the way they're going to lay on that board. So you can put your terminal strips and all that. So it's just easier to mount them if you have a little bit of some kind of awl or you could do it with a nail and a hammer. But all of these great drawings are up on the website, and we'll talk about that. The first thing you have to do with all of this is you have to do something about the tube socket, because you cannot mount those tube sockets and then try to solder them underneath, because there is no underneath. So what you do is look at all the diagrams we have, and you'll want to wire them beforehand. Wire as much as you can. Here's one of them that Gene did. Gene's the guy that's doing all of these great, great drawings. Thank you so much, Gene. And you'll see he mounted it on a piece of board, and then he marked where the pins are, and that allows him to do all of the pieces and parts, and he's ready to go. Now, you have to mount that on the pine board. And that's been a little bit of a situation, in that after we do this and we have our tube socket with everything mounted, as you saw in the drawing, how do you do that? Well, you need a standoff, and we couldn't find standoffs until, and I'm sorry I didn't bring the email, but one of you, thank you very much, said, hey, why don't you go to a local hardware store and maybe they'll have a lot of this. Well, I do that. I do shop at a lot of the little hardware stores. We got one here in Pleasant Hope, believe it or not. But I went to Ace Hardware, and guess what I found? I found exactly what we need, a little standoff. The screw will go through the tube socket, and then when you do all this together, that tube socket will be able to stand up above the board. See, I hope you can see that. That's how that works. You need two of them. And they're a whole 43 cents a piece. And there's the part number. We'll have it in a minute. I'll show it to you on their on the parts list. But that's what you want to do first, is you want to mount as much as you can on the tube socket, because it makes it really easy then. You turn that baby upside down and you're ready to go. And here and again is a wonderful, wonderful drawing that that Gene made. I just can't talk enough about his work. And he's made it really easy for you. And there it is. And all of these drawings are on the website. Go to HeilSound.com. And we don't sell anything about that. We're just giving you the information. It's a great place for us to put all of these things. It's all down at the bottom past all of our products. And you'll see the Pine Board Project. And there's comments and stuff. And we're talking to each other. Stuff. It's really great. There is the schematic of the transmitter. And that's the schematic that you just heard Richard transmitting a couple hundred miles away. And it really works great, and it's very simple. Now, I had one other problem when I was doing this. We have a piece of pine board, right? How are we going to mount the SO239? How are you going to do that? Because you can't drill a hole in it. Well, you could, but it'd be kind of stupid. So I took we've shown you how you run the ground path with the number 14 or 12 copper wire, and I made a little cage for it. And, man, it worked out really good. And there is a drawing that Gene has done for us. That's copper wire, and it's really sturdy. It works great. And that's how you'll mount that. I have a switch on it also, the push-to-talk switch, and I did that also. Now, one of the things that we haven't talked about, and we keep reviewing a lot of this because everybody's not together. One's a little ahead of the other and so on. And that is the coil. Very, very important about the coil. And Richard and Gene and I talk about it just about every other day. We're talking about what are we going to do about that coil. And we finally got that nailed really well, and that's from MFJ. The coil that we have and that you heard on the transmitter a minute ago, and my coil, that came from MFJ, and that's the coil that they use in one of their amplifiers. And so they're making this coil for us, though. This one's 41 turns. Their coil for their amplifier is much longer. And they're making this just for us. And you'll notice here, I dented one of the turns in. And what that's for is this little clip lead out here. And you attach that in there, and we just went on 40 meters. That's my band switch, okay? And later on, we get all this finished. One of the projects, I'm going to have a lot of little added features. One of them going to be, we'll put a band switch on this thing. But I've had it on 40 meters. It works great. The band switch right now is this little clip lead, clipped right there. I think it's 14 turns. We need the whole coil, 41 turns for 75. But then we have to change the crystal. So what you do is you unplug the 75-meter crystal, and I drilled a couple of little holes right here, and that is my other crystal. That's the support, so I don't lose it. And then you plug that in, and we're on 40 meters, just that quick. And then we can take the 75-meter one and put it in the spare holes so you don't lose it. You go. And these are all things we'll talk about as we get along. But one of the things that we want to do is to help you make the coil. And Gene came up with a really cool deal. He got it at Lowe's, and it's a cable. It is right there. It's plastic. It's a cable comb. So if you had a bunch of wires, you could lay them in here and organize a run of cables. Well, you also can take that, go in another section of Lowe's, and get you a little 2-inch, 1.5-inch piece of PVC, and bingo, you can make your own coil. And there are all of the instructions. We'll get into this more thorough as we get along in another couple of weeks. But it'll be on the site, so you can read all of Gene's all of his information on how he did it. But you mount these coil combs on to the PVC and just wrap the 14 gauge, and it works great. So that's one way of doing it. And also we have another one where you just wind the coil. And that's kind of fun too, is making the coil. Richard used also an inch and a half piece of just PVC, but you have to put it in a microwave oven first. And you're going to go, what? Your wife, your girlfriend, or she's going to say, what are you doing? Well, I'm curing my PVC. What? You have to do that because PVC and RF don't like each other. So you put it in a microwave oven for a couple minutes, and then you can wind a coil around it. Probably didn't know that, did you? All these crazy things, but it works when you get it all done. There is the complete list, including one that Gene put on there about an hour ago. Put on that Ace Hardware part for the standoff. But that's all of them. Now, again, most of these come from Antique Electronic Supply. You go to their website, which is Tubes and More, and you can put in the search box Ham Nation, and they've got the kits, the power supply, the preamp. I think they've got them all up there now, but be watching because they've got them all set up like that for you. And the only thing is that I would buy my tubes from Tubes, from vacuumtubes.com. They seem to Mike is he's a ham, and he really has a little better price and so on. So there's where you get your tubes. Crystals, I've got a lot of people coming at me like, what are you going to do for crystals? The International Crystals gone, yeah, but Bry's still there. AF4K, and he makes great crystals. I've got several of them, and they work perfect. And then AES, Antique Electronic Supply. But that's all of the good things. Here's one other great thing that Gene sent me. That is his transmitter. And that's the coil that we just talked about. And it's really good. What a nice job Gene did there. And that coil is done with that cable comb. Isn't that pretty? Not finished yet, but he's close. So I just wanted to give you some of those insights to what's going on and where we're going. And again, you go back to heilsound.com and you'll be able to see all of these great drawings and comments from people, and it's really great. We're very excited about what's going on with all of this. So thanks to W0BVT, the guy you heard on the recording, for giving me the inspiration. And then, of course, what we do without all these drawings. Well, you know what we did, me and my funky pen on a whiteboard. So anyway, that's pretty much it for what we're doing here, guys and girls. And I'm really excited about next week. I think we'll be able to pull this off. George is going to do another one of his sessions. If you didn't see this, you go back to heilsound.com and check this out, where he explained how vacuum tube worked. That was really good, George. And he's going to now tell us, how does this thing work? Like, what's going on here? Like a Hi-Zine modulator? What's that? There's no modulation transformer. How's that work? George, you got it all ready to go, I bet you, huh? In your mind.
I'm working on it, Bob. It occurred to me that I probably need to stop and explain what a pentode is and how that kind of differs from the triode we talked about earlier. So that's what we're going to talk about next week. And we're going to tear on into the transmitter as well, but I think we need to explain how that tube works first so we've got a good idea which way we headed. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do modulation, isn't it, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You don't need all those big modulation transformers for a thing like this. We'll look forward to what you got going, and it'll take a couple of weeks. And you're back. Everything good, and it's good to see you.
It's good to see you too, Bob, and good to be back. I bought a few things. Well, I was in Houston last week visiting with my son and his family, and I've got grandson number three now. So that was a fun trip to go out there. And any time I'm out there, I like to visit the electronic stores. I picked up a few what I thought were bargains. Maybe not bargains, but things I wanted anyway that I hadn't been able to find locally. We'll talk about those in just a minute. But first, let's get a message from ICOM.
Start this year's contest season with ICOM. Heard it, worked it, logged it? The time is now to get your contesting equipment. Let ICOM help you make as many contacts as possible. Start off strong in the contesting this season with the IC7300. Ideal for the ham on the go, it's a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with compact design, RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Use the IC7851 and get the most out of contest season. Raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this HF 50 MHz transceiver, reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. For more information on all ICOM radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur today.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you can win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for July, that new radio is going to be this new ICOM ID4100A dual band VHF and UHF, one band at a time. D-Star Mobile with big rig features, does analog as well, built-in GPS receiver, full dot matrix display, micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and available Android and iOS applications are out there, both analog and D-Star operation, and a lot more. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And this is a nice rig here. I've been playing with it some. It's similar to my ID880H, except, boy, they've really stepped it up quite a bit with this. And I just received today the Bluetooth module to go in here, so I'm going to be able to play with those apps for this radio as well. I'm looking forward to doing that. Well, you know, as I mentioned a moment ago, I went to Houston, and you may have already guessed one of the things I picked up, and that I did not have a tube AM radio around here anywhere. You know, I had them when I was a kid, but most of them kind of got torn up and dissected to see what was in them, so I didn't have any anymore. And I've been looking for quite a while for, you know, a decent tube-type AM receiver. And I found this one right here. This came from a place in Houston called EPO. It's Electronics Parts Outlet. EPOHouston.com is their website. They have a lot of new and surplus parts there. It was like going to Dayton Hamvention and visiting the flea market. Not as much ham gear there, but you're talking about the electronic stuff, just everything you could imagine all under one roof there. And this is the biggest thing I picked up. It's a 1938 Motorola standard broadcast band receiver. That means AM broadcast band. Plus, it's got a shortwave band on it, too. And I can't see what that covers right now, but I think it was 4 to 18 megahertz. And, you know, I see stuff like this at the Ham Fest, but usually the price is a little more than I want to pay, or, you know, there's a lot of problems with it. this one actually works. And now, why I could have bought one that didn't work and resurrected it, hopefully, I kind of went in the direction of buying one that works already, because then I know all the transformers and everything are good in here, and I'm not going to have to worry about finding a part that's going to be very expensive or very hard to find. Now, I'll probably go in and replace the electrolytic capacitors in here if someone doesn't already have done that to it. I don't know. I haven't opened it up yet to see what it looks like on the inside. All I know is it works, and that was one of the things I was looking for. Then, you know, I'll up it from there. I'll probably have to replace the speaker. You know, it's got one of the old speakers of that era. It's got an electromagnet on the rear of it, so, rather than a permanent magnet like modern speakers. And that magnet served two different purposes. You know, it acted as a magnet for the speaker voice coil to work against, but also it's an inductor, so is, you know, a choke in the power supply in the radio as well. So you can't just throw that out and stick a regular speaker in there. I'm going to put a regular speaker in there, I'm sure, you know, because this one's probably, the cone is rotted on it. But I'll want to save that magnet or that electromagnet off the rear, so I've still got the choke in the power supply. Now, this one's got a few other cosmetic problems to it as well. There's a crack here. Right along the top ridge, and I did some searching on the internet for this, and the only other one on there I found a picture of had a crack in the same exact spot, and the guy told he restored it. So I'm going to go through and restore the cabinet. I know antiques, they say a lot of times, you know, leave them like they are. Don't monkey with them. That hurts the value. But no, I'm going to try to restore this, make it look as good as I can. So That was my big item right there. EPO, Electronic Parts Outlet, EPO Houston. If you're out in Houston, you definitely want to stop by there. They must buy every electronic shop that goes out of business, because it was really well stocked. A couple other things I got while I was there, and you see these frequently at the Ham Fest, so this is nothing special here, but it's a Motorola communication speaker. I needed one more external speaker for one of the rigs in the mobile, and I saw this sitting there at a decent price on it, and I said, well, I'm going to pick it up. I had them check it, and it worked, so I picked that up. Another thing that I got, and I actually bought two of these. How often do you find an old-school VU meter anywhere for sale? I got two of them there. They say First Colony Bible Chapel. I guess they were in a church PA system, a real old one or something. Maybe I have no idea, but they had a pair of them there, so I picked up both of them. It's a handy thing to have, a VU meter, if you like audio. Something else I picked up that, you know, I've been looking for a while, and it's kind of hard to find. This is a strip board. You know, it's kind of like perf board, except the individual holes on there are not individual solder pads. It's in strips. Each row of holes is connected in a strip so that you don't have to put so many jumpers in there. You know, it's I don't know. To me, this is just a better way to do it, and it's kind of always used. I picked up four of these, $5 a piece. So I was mighty proud to find those. And, you know, seemed like a very good price compared to what I'm seeing around. And one other thing I bought, this didn't come from EPO. This came from Micro Center, which was my first visit to a Micro Center. I've never been to one of those before. I did go buy fries, of course, and picked up a few little items there, but this is a Raspberry Pi Zero W, which means it's had the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth modules added onto the board here. You remember the Raspberry Pi, the little small computer sells for $35. Well, this is a compact version of it, scaled down a little bit, but still it's got a lot of power in it, and it's got a USB port, and it's got the GPIO pins here, so you can do digital I/O with it, built-in Wi-Fi, HDMI port, all of that. $10. $10. I would have bought two, but the price went up to $15 a piece if you bought two. So I just bought the one for $10. Don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but hey, if you're into that kind of thing, boy, this is really a value here. And it's, I already got the Wi-Fi built into it too. So I'm looking forward to some project in the future. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I'll be making something fun with that. And that's pretty much my shopping excursion to Houston and some of the electronics outlets out there. I got a lot more than this, but, these were the items that I thought were probably the most interesting. I'll tell you what, why don't we give away something, and why don't we make it one of Gordo's books? We like to give away Gordo's stuff. It wasn't last week because I wasn't here. It was the week before. We looked at that MFJ 1026 noise counselor. You remember looking at that? If you didn't see that episode, you need to go back and watch it, because that thing really solved a big problem that I had with a particular noise on 40 meters. It really worked. It actually surprised me how well it worked. But I asked the question, what is the secret sauce that makes that noise counselor work? And I got an answer from Brad Moran, KG7OTQ. And he said, I believe phasing is the secret ingredient. And you're correct, Brad. That's exactly what makes it work, is phasing. There were controls in there. You have two antennas connected to the unit. You adjust the phase between them, and then the gain to balance it out so that one is exactly the opposite of the other, and it cancels out the noise. Pretty amazing, but actually, it was quite effective. So, Brad, you're going to get your choice of one of Gordo's books. It's either going to be the technician, the general class, the extra class, or I assume even the general radio operator's license manual if you're already an extra and looking for the next stage. So thanks, Gordo, for giving us these books. You can find them at anybody that sells ham radio gear. They've got them, and they're the definitive guide for studying for your amateur exams. You can see this one's got pages flagged all through it here. And on studying for your license, we're doing another ham college this Friday night, 8 p.m. Central, 0100 UTC, at live.amateurlogic.tv. And we're in the general class pool now. So this will be our second episode covering that. Questions are getting a little harder than they were in the technician exam. And when we run across something we don't know the exact answer to, or we want a better explanation, right here, go to one of Gordo's books. Well, I've got another question for next week, and actually, we're going to pull this one out of Gordo's extra class manual, so it's going to be a little bit harder. And actually, when I saw it, I did not recognize this question when I took my extra exam, and then I remembered I didn't really study for my extra exam. I just kind of passed my general, and they said, do you want to take the extra? And I said, yeah, and I got lucky. Because if I had seen this question here, I probably would have missed it. And it is, which of these methods is commonly used to convert analog signals to digital signals? Is it sequential sampling, harmonic regeneration, level shifting, or phase reversal? Which of those methods is commonly used to convert analog signals into digital signals? If you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And you might win one of these MFJ 113 Giant 12 or 24 hour alarm clock, big digital display on it. You can see it easily from across the room. Perfect clock for your ham shack. So hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Answer that question there, and you might be next week's winner. Well, now it is time to, well, as I usually say, find out what's going on in the wide, wide world of news. And who better to tell us that than Don Wilbanks?
Wow. What a lead-in. While you were in Houston, I was up in Oklahoma City. I wasn't getting a new grandchild. I mean, my son's only 17, so I'm a few years away from that. But I did go to a really cool ham fest. I went to the Oklahoma City Ham Fest, Ham Holiday. The first ham holiday they had, I think, was 1973. I went to one in 1975. I went to the next one in 1995. And now this one in 2017. We've got some pictures from Ham Holiday. I guarantee you it will not be another 20 years before I get back there. Brian, go ahead and bring those pictures up, and we'll talk about them a little bit. Ham Holiday right there in the heart of Oklahoma City. On the north side, there at the Tower Hotel. It used to be a Marriott, if you know where the old Marriott was there on the north side. That was one view of, I believe that was Friday night. It was a Friday-Saturday ham fest, so not a whole lot of people there, but it was completely packed. Go ahead and scroll through these, Brian, as I'm talking. It was completely packed on Saturday. 700 or 800 people, I believe, was the attendance. So not a bad little ham fest. There I am chatting with some folks at the banquet where I was a guest on Friday night and got up and spoke and just had a great time. And there was the assembled throng there listening to me babble and rattle my gums as I'm telling them about youth and ham radio and Newsline and Ham Nation and all kinds of other things. So a big thank you to the Ham Holiday folks for having me up there. And I guarantee you have not seen the last of me. So there. That'll teach you, won't it? Great time. Great people. Nice, so nice to be back home in Oklahoma. Let's go ahead and get the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2073, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, July 26th, 2017. On June 1st, Brian Lloyd, WB6RQN, departed Florida on a flight to commemorate the 80th anniversary of Amelia Earhart's famous attempt at circumnavigating the world. Newsline caught up with Brian for an update.
Greetings from Hamilton, New Zealand. The sun has just come up and it looks like another beautiful day. I wish I was flying. A couple of days ago, I departed from New Zealand heading for Pago Pago. I got out over the Pacific Ocean about 50 or so nautical miles north of Great Barrier Island, which is just off the North Island of New Zealand. And my engine began to have problems. In fact, I got the airplane turned around and headed back to New Zealand. And the engine actually quit several times on the way back. It wasn't exactly clear that I was going to make it back, and there was a good chance that I was going to go swimming. There were some moments there where I was a little concerned, but it all turned out okay. Practically everywhere I've gone, either a ham or an aviation person has put me up in their home. It's just been great. I'd say I've made probably 100, 150 contacts. Flying an airplane with a notepad on your lap and trying to take down calls and write down the time so that you can enter it into the log later is kind of a challenge. I've had a few roadblocks thrown up. You know, I work my way around them and keep going. And that's all I can do is put one foot in front of the other, and eventually I'll get to my destination, and that's the goal.
First in May, it's the Dayton Hamvention. Next, in July, it's Ham Radio Friedrichshafen, Germany. And Newsline's Ed Durant, DD5LP, was there.
Now we're inside the hall. Got in very early, so it's just as the people are coming in. I'm down at the end of the hall A1 at the moment and looking at the DARC and the WRTC 2018 exhibit. There's still people setting up. There's work going on. Stood next to somebody who was actually embroidering T-shirts and hats. And across from the Luso Tower site for the masts and the two young ladies in the Japanese kimonos. Looking across, we've got the Österreichisch, so the Austrian amateur group, going to the left. And behind them, the German one, taking the biggest space, of course. Well, as you can hear, nobody could say that the maker fair was quiet. We've got a children's play area here with cycling go-karts. And cycle them around, and beer garden, of course, play castle, and they've even got a band up on a stage at the end here. These are actually robotic players, metal characters that they've built up, and playing different things, quite crazy. Okay, so that was Friedrichshafen for another year. successful visit. If any of you are thinking about getting over to Germany, see if you can time it with the Ham Radio in Friedrichshafen. Next year it will be June the 1st to the 3rd, but well worth the visit if you can get here. What did I find the most interesting? I have to say, the robotic rock band at the Maker Fair on Sunday. It's really interesting what these groups are doing technically, and combining both the Hamfest and the regional Maker Fair into one event was a good idea. For Amateur Radio Newsline, this was Ed Durant, DD5LP, on site at Ham Radio Friedrichshafen 2017.
Rounding out the top three in September, the Tokyo Ham Fair. For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Brian Lloyd, WB6RQN, Ed Durant, DD5LP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. All right, Dr. Tamitha Skov is still in Europe. She tweeted me, and got me a message all the way from Paris, France, I believe, somewhere in France, and got me some information on the solar update. So let's go ahead and jump straight into that. Your solar storm and aurora five-day outlook. She says the Earth-facing sun's quieted down since the big sunspot that rotated into the sun's backside. More info on that one coming up. Conditions will remain normal to unsettled with only a small chance of storming at high altitudes. Switching to the solar flare and radiation storm outlook, the big sunspot from last week is now on the sun's backside, but it is still launching solar storms and radiation storms, the most recent being a monster launched on the 23rd. That's caused elevated radiation levels all the way around the sun to the Earth. These levels will continue for the next few days before returning to normal. Expect increased noise levels on the amateur radio bands over the next few days. Intermittent issues on GPS and GNSS are also possible, especially at high latitudes. Now, she sent me a message about this. This is a direct quote. I just found out we barely missed a Carrington-class solar storm. The Carrington event back in 1858, you remember us talking about that, where it actually shocked some telegraph operators. The keys in their hands became electrified, and sparks from the Morse code keys that actually set papers on fire. And as you can see on the slides where the aurora was actually seen way down into the mid-latitudes, that was huge. She says, we barely missed a Carrington-class solar storm. Remember that massive sunspot that just crossed the Earth-facing sun? It's on the backside, and it fired a monster. We are so lucky. This is the second time in 5 years we've seen a Carrington-class event. I think the lower activity cycles are actually enabling the biggest solar storms to be launched. Scary. I'm not sure the scientific community expected to see two Carrington-class events so close together, let alone during the same cycle. We may not be done with Carrington-class events. Last time one hit us, we were coming out of solar minimum. That time is coming up for us in about 3 years. I will be sure to do a video on them and the implications when I return. You ham radio ops are really on the forefront of the weather for the 21st century. I'm not saying that to be cute either. After this, it would not surprise me if we witnessed a Carrington event hit Earth in our lifetime. This is nothing to be taken lightly, people. Dodged a serious bullet. I suggest you follow Dr. Tamitha Skov on Twitter. It's at Tamitha Skov. She's also has a website, spaceweatherwoman.com, that is in the process of being relaunched. Definitely give her a follow on Twitter. She posts all the time, almost 24 hours a day. She's posting something about space weather, and we are so fortunate to have her on our team. Here, not just at Newsline and Ham Nation, but on the ham radio team, because she is studying for her license. And as soon as she finds time, she's gonna take that test and pass it, I am sure. Let's go ahead and see what's going on with Amanda. Amanda, how are you tonight, darling?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for asking. I, too, had a wonderful weekend. Not so adventurous of tackling women and airplanes and landing emergencies and all that stuff. But I did have fun at Rally Colorado this weekend. So I can't wait until next week. You guys, I'm going to put some pictures together and talk about it. This is my first rally. I don't know if anyone's ever gone to them, but these are like with the Subaru WRXs and really souped up and stuff. Taking out these dirt roads outside of a town, no cell phone service, no ham radio for miles. It was interesting to put communications on for that. So it was a fun time. About 25 of us hams went out there to support that. On Rangeley, Colorado, by the way, never heard of it before I was asked to do it, 6 hours away from here. Again, a blast. All right, let's get to some questions. We've got Dave in for AJK wants to know, where can I get the PL crystals for my HW2036A, his 2-meter Heath kit?
I think Bob dropped out. I don't think Bob is with us tonight. If you go on the Heil Sound.com website and look up what he's got for the Pine Board project, he has all of those resources listed.
Okay, this is a Heath kit. It's a question for Dave. Hi, Dave.
I can take that one. Hi. Oh,
okay. Thank you.
Well, so the Hot Water 2036A is a synthesized radio, so he must be talking. I'm not sure what he's talking about crystals for that. I actually have a Hot Water 2036A right here, and it is frequency synthesized. Of course, there's oscillator crystals in it, but they're not channel crystals.
Okay, and he did mention get the PL crystals, and I might have left that part out, but...
I might have missed that part. Your best bet, Hot Water 2036s go really, really cheap at Hamfests. I bought this one that sits up here. I bought for, I think, $15 at a Hamfest, and it works absolutely perfectly. So finding a junker for $5 would not at all be out of the question versus buying new crystals, which would run you $25 a piece probably.
Absolutely, not to mention the wait time. So let's see. I have... This is an interesting question. One of the fellows that we talked to on our local repeaters was talking about parasitic dipoles and adding on a 10-meter dipole to an already built 6-meter dipole and putting it on top of it. George, do you have any info about that?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean there. If you're talking about adding other dipoles onto an existing one, you can do that. Cut each one for the length you want. Just feed them all from the same point. Is that the question?
So the way I'm getting it explained in the background here is that he already had a 10-meter dipole and he wanted to add a 6-meter dipole element, or excuse me, a 6-meter element on top of it. And he didn't know the distance to put those between the two of them.
Parasitic.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the distance, that's a good question. I am not sure how to answer that either. I don't think it has to be real far away because, there are people that make multiband dipoles that have a lot more elements on it than that. So I would just experiment with it a little bit. I wouldn't think a tremendous separation, probably out on the ends of it. You'd want them to be, probably 3 or 4 feet apart minimum.
Okay. Well, in chat room, if you have any input, let us know. We'd love to hear it. Next question. Now, a lot of us have been getting a lot of weather. There's a lot of monsoon activity going on right now. Pierre wants to know, is it normal to have SWR rise during heavy rain? He has a hex beam on a 20 meter and it's normally 1.5 to 1, but in heavy rain, it's up to 2.8 to 1. The connections seem to be tight and sealed with tape. But he wants to know, is there anything he needs to know about heavy rain weather and why the SWR goes up? George, you want to take that?
Yeah, I would say, I might expect to see a slight change, but something like that, there's probably a bad connection somewhere. Hopefully he's not getting water into the coax connector on it, but that seems a bit much to me.
Okay. And, I didn't get any other Heath kit questions. I'm really surprised, you guys. I'll give you one last shot there to send out some questions. I still wanted to talk to Don. And Don, did Tyler make any QSOs yet on the radio? We got to know.
No, he hasn't. I heard crystals and I immediately thought of the Pine Board projects. I'm sorry for jumping in there. No, he hasn't. He's been busy trying to get his truck running. So he has not even touched a radio yet. But he does have his call sign. His call sign is KG5 UHI, but that will change because that call sign was granted on Monday, and on Monday we also applied for his vanity. So his vanity is coming. So So right now it's KG5UHI if and when he gets on the radio before he gets his vanity.
Did he come up with some weird phonetics for that, UHI?
A friend of mine did, actually. Bo Walker, who's a broadcast friend of mine that I've known for 20-some-odd years, and we worked together for a long time. And he's not even a ham. But you know, being around me, he knows about it. So he came up with Killer Ganja 5. You high?
It wasn't me, you guys, I promise. And I'm from Colorado, and that's something a Coloradoan should have said.
Swear,
and it wasn't me.
That's what he came up
with. It was not me.
That's what he came up with.
So that's an interesting one. If you guys can come up with a weirder one, we'll put it on the show. All right. We have one question for Dave. This comes from K7AGE Randy. He says, how many tubes are in your collection, and does it keep the shack pretty warm for you?
Well, that's a good question. I had actually meant to do a complete tube count of everything that sits behind me. So I don't know exactly how many are in every radio, but it's well over 100 that are behind me. And of course, the tubes that I have in the shop that aren't active, there's probably about 2,000, 3,000 spare tubes. But it does get hot. And that's why I built that the Heathkit fan, the fake Heathkit fan system, to suck the warm air out. And the shack is air conditioned. So it gets very warm in here, and it does heat the room in the wintertime if I keep all the rigs on. I don't normally do that, only during this event.
Oh, absolutely. And you could just watch your meter go ee! As you have all those tubes on. So, hey, it was so great to have you on today, tonight, Dave. Let's go over a couple of the nets. 20-meter net is scratched tonight, folks. I'm sorry. Weather is just too extreme. Nobody can hear anybody on 20 meters. So 40 meters, try 7192. We also have the D-Star net on 14 Charlie. We have a D-Drop-In for Echolink. And we have TAC 311 for DMR. All right, Don, I think you're wrapping it up tonight. Back to you, babe.
I got nothing. I am done. We've had a great show tonight. The Heathkit stuff, Dave, just amazing. Thanks so much for being on here. And, of course, Bob's pine board just never ceases to amaze. Good stuff from George tonight, too. And Amanda also just the best. I can't imagine anybody else doing the chat room segment. And it sucks that you got to be at the end of the show. But, of course, that's the only place you can be because we wouldn't have any questions otherwise.
I know, but, I just have to make them all up.
That's it. That's it. Make the best of your limited time. We appreciate what you do. So
you.
That'll do it, I think, for all of us. So we'll say good night for Bob and Gordo and everybody else here. Thanks for being here. And thanks to the folks at WTWW Shortwave for carrying our audio. Good people. Go check out their Android app. I did not know they had an Android app, but it's there. It's under QSO Radio Show in the Google Play Store. So go check that out. Hopefully they'll get an iOS app one of these days soon. So for everybody here with Ham Nation and Brian and everybody else, good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. 7-3.
Good night, everybody.
7-3. Yeah. Thanks, Dave, for being here. It was fun.
Oh, yeah, great stuff.
Great stuff, Dave.